I have a confession to make. I care far too much about fashion. I love clothes. I really enjoy shoes, probably to a fault. I've made a deal with my kids that as I get older, that if I lose or the fashion sense starts to wane, they're supposed to take over my wardrobe and my closet to ensure that I don't fall into dad style. So they have full control at any point. They can just take the keys away from me, in essence, and take over the wardrobe and the closet. I remember a couple of years ago, President Obama was out with his daughters, and he was ridiculed for his dad jeans. Remember that? Ridiculed for his dad jeans. That started a whole trend of dad bods became kind of popular for a very short period of time, and maybe even a shorter period of time, was what Vogue magazine called dad style. Remember dad style? Dad style became cool for a very short period of time. It's kind of funny in our society to laugh about the way dads dress. People say, I don't know what happens, but we have kids and all of a sudden dad can't dress anymore. And it becomes kind of a joke. And it's kind of a badge of honor, I think, as dads to just say, I don't care. I can wear whatever I want to wear. This is kind of who I am and this is how I dress. So just kind of like it. I'm not really ashamed of whatever I wear. And that's kind of funny as well. But the Bible has a lot to say about dads and shame. And that's where we're going to hang most of the time this morning. There's going to be a little part to talk about kids and obeying your parents. But most of what we're going to talk about is what does it mean to be a dad who can be not ashamed in the public square, or as the scripture calls it, at the gates. This is from Psalms 127. It says, behold, children are a heritage from the Lord. It also means a blessing from the Lord. You may have memorized it that way. The fruit of the womb, a reward, like arrows in the hands of a warrior, are the children of one's youth. Isn't that a cool picture? Blessed is the man who fills his quiver with them. And look at this. He shall not be put to shame when he speaks with his enemies in the gates. Not be put to shame has nothing to do with fashion. It has to do with a far more dangerous and deadly disease of a lack of leadership inside of the home. And that's where we're going to spend our time this morning in Ephesians 6, talking about what that looks like to have a spirit-filled home and to be a spirit-filled child, and then to be a spirit-filled dad, where we'll spend most of our time broadly, what it looks like to be a spirit-filled family. Here's the whole talk this morning. Kids, you're supposed to obey. All of us are supposed to honor. Dads, we can't provoke our kids to anger. And dads, we have to make Jesus the hero of our home. That's where we're going. Those are the 4 points, and we'll step through them. So here's the first one. Children, obey your parents. This is from verse 1. Super simple. All of these commands are super simple. There's no complexity to them. There's no pull apart the phrases. I don't know what that means. What are you trying to say? No, the commands are really simple. The meaning is really clear. You don't need me to really even say what they say. It's clear. The challenge is doing. And the question for us this morning is, are we doers or just hearers? We're going to understand what this means. The question is, are we going to do it? So here's the first one. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. This is kind of a funny verse in a sense, right? Children, what is he referring to as children? Well, if you're in your parents' home, if they're paying for your room, if they pay for your food, then you qualify as children in this context. This is what the word means. So it applies to little kids. It applies to teenagers. If your mom or dad buy your cleats when you start a new sport, you're in this verse, okay? So if you're playing a sport and you need new shoes for it and your parents pay for it, you're under this umbrella of children. And then he says, obey your parents in the Lord. What does that mean? In the Lord. In the Lord means that you do it for Jesus. So when your mom asks you to do something that you don't mind doing, it means you should do it for Jesus. When your mom asks you to do something and it seems completely unreasonable in your 11-year-old mind, it means do it for Jesus. And doing it for Jesus says, Jesus, thank you for dying for me on the cross. Thank you for saving me from my sins. And though I think my mom is being unreasonable, for Jesus' sake, I'll obey her. That's what in the Lord means. It means that whatever mom and dad ask you to do, with the exception of it, they ask you to do something sinful. So if your dad asks you to go kill somebody, don't do that. That wouldn't be in the Lord. But everything else is under this umbrella of obey your parents in the Lord. And then he says this really odd phrase at the end. He says, for this is right. Now, how many commands do you think there are in the Bible where God commands us to do something and it's not right? Answer, none of them, right? There's no commands like that. So why does he say, children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right? The word right here means fitting. And what Paul is trying to say and what God is trying to say to kids is that it's fitting for you to obey your parents, that you were created, you were built, you were made, you were designed. Everything about you was oriented so that you would obey your parents. This is what it means to be fitting. So kids, illustration would be when you're about to outgrow those shoes and your toes start to cramp against the front part of it and they're uncomfortable and you can't run as fast and you go to the store and you put on the new pair of shoes and then you run down the aisle to test them out. Anybody do that? Run down the aisle to test them out. You jump in them to see how high you can jump. Look, mom, look how high I can jump. These are good shoes and they fit. They feel good. That's what God's talking about. He's saying that children, when you obey your parents, it fits. It feels good. You were designed, you were made, you were created, you were built. Everything about the home was designed so that you would obey your parents in the Lord. Okay, that's the whole sermon for kids. That's it right there. Obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. This is fitting. This feels good. It's the way it's supposed to be. Now, what we're going to talk about the rest of the time, we're going to do a quick command for all of us. Then we're going to spend some time talking about your dads and their responsibility, kids. So you should start praying for your dad, because if your dad does what we're about to talk about in just a second, if he does that really well, your command is going to be a lot easier. Okay? All right. So start praying for your dad right now. We're praying that you would be obedient. So here's the second command in the text. This is for all of us. This one applies not just to kids or children. If you have a mom or a dad, this command is for you. Verse 2 and 3, honor your father and mother. This is the first commandment with a promise that it may go well with you and that you may live long in the land. We're commanded by God that we're to honor our father and mother. And then he does this parenthetical. This is the first commandment with a promise. So this is, he's referring back to the Ten Commandments. It's nearly an exact quote from the Ten Commandments, this verse 2 and 3. And he's telling us parenthetically, hey, this is one of the Ten Commandments. And what's unique about this commandment is that it has an explicit promise that goes with it. And you can see that if you go to Exodus 20, go read the Ten Commandments. This commandment to honor our father and mother has an explicit promise in it. And the promise is that it will go well with us and that you'll live long in the land. So does this mean that God's saying if we honor our father and mother, that we're going to live a long time? That's not what he's talking about. He's saying that in a culture, in a society, in a people, and in the culture of our church, I would say this in our group of our church, in our body, that if we honor our father and mother, that's going to go well with us collectively. So it doesn't assure that you're going to live a really long time or that your life is going to be easy, but to live and to breathe in a society, in a culture, in a people group where people care for the elderly, for where people give honor to the fathers and mothers, it's going to go well for all of us. If people are compassionate towards their father and mother, if they are honoring towards their father and mother, it's going to go well for us. It's going to be a society of compassion and care. This thing is going to go well for us. That's what he intends it to be. The Bible talks about it in kind of two ways when it talks about honoring our father and mother. And honoring our father and mother just simply means to put them in a place of importance. And there's lots of verses in Proverbs and other places that talk about the way we talk. So it has to do with how we speak to our father and mother. Do we talk to them respectfully? Do we care about them? Do we engage with them? And then how do we talk about them? So there's elements in the scriptures about how we use our words to honor our father and mother, and that's important. The other aspect of it that you find in the scripture is not just what you use with your words, but how do you care for them? How do you care for your father and mother? Look at these words from 1 Timothy 5:8. If anyone does not provide for his relatives, especially for those members of his household, he has denied the faith and he is worse than an unbeliever. Well, that's harsh, right? If you don't provide for your relatives, you are worse than an unbeliever. You've denied the faith. So there's an element of honoring our father and mother that we care for our father and mother, particularly at a stage of life, end of life issues. And there have been a number of these in our church over the last 2 or 3 years where we've had families have to go through the dark and difficult journey of end of life issues, where parents are struggling towards the end of life and kids, adults, have had to take care of them. It's a beautiful picture of the gospel of selfless sacrifice and love to care for a parent at the end of life. That's about honoring them, honoring your father and mother. And it applies to all of us that we are all responsible for honoring father and mother. Let me give you one other application and then I'll get to dads. The other application I would make of this is in marriage. So when you get married, you become one flesh. That means his father and mother just became your father and mother, and vice versa. Her father and mother became your father and mother. So while it's funny to joke about in-laws, it's not biblical. Biblically, we should honor our father and mother, both our in-laws and our birth father and mother. We should give them the place of importance and the place of honor, and that's where they should reside, with care and compassion, the way we speak about them, the way we talk about them, the way we talk to them, and the way that we care for them. It's honoring our father and mother. It's one of the cool things about C3 to see the number of generations that we have in our church. There's a number of families where you have grandkids, parents, and grandkids doing life together inside the body of Christ. That's a picture of what it should look like. It's a place of honor. Okay, those two. That's the short part of the sermon. Now we're going to zero in on dads. Verse 4. So in verse 4, it says, fathers, back to Ephesians, fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. Point number 3 is don't provoke your children to anger. Fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. Now, before we get too far into this, I want to bring us up to like 50,000 feet, and I want us to think about what God is saying here. So in this text that we just read, notice what happens in verse 1. Children, obey your parents. Verse 2, honor your father and mother. Then we get to verse 4, fathers. So when God speaks about the home and what it's supposed to look like, children are to obey parents, we're to honor father and mother. And then when God turns towards a seriousness of what is the mission of the home supposed to look like, he drops mothers and he zeroes in on fathers. The sole responsibility in the home for raising children does not reside with the dad. Mothers and fathers have responsibility for raising kids. The primary responsibility for leading falls on the fathers. And so when God gives instruction about what are you supposed to lead towards, what is supposed to be the mission of the home, he doesn't say parents, he says fathers, dads. So what I'm going to say this morning in about verse 4, it applies to mothers and to fathers. Mothers, you should be doing these same things that I'm going to say dads should be leading in. But the primary responsibility that God gives is to the fathers, to the dads. Dads, you have to lead in this. And your wives should follow in that. But dads, this is your responsibility. It's not appropriate for you to look to your wife and think, hey, you take care of this stuff. No, no, no. This is the dad's responsibility. This is the dad's mission. This is the dad's call. And God, if he were to, and he will, ultimately hold us accountable for the family, he will hold us accountable, guys, as responsible for having set the appropriate mission inside of our home. We will give an account for this. Your wife will give an account for something else. We will give an account for whether or not we led in this. Okay, so now let's deal with the verse itself. Verse 4 there. That fathers, do not provoke your children to anger. So why are we saying this, the do not provoke your children to anger? What does that mean? Isn't it interesting? There's nothing tactical in this verse. When you start to talk about how to parent, how to lead, there's nothing tactical in this verse. Or frankly, a lot of verses, there's no verses on this. Like, what time is an appropriate bedtime for my kids? There's none of that in the scripture. Should my kids be able to spend the night at somebody else's house? I mean, there's no formula for deciding whether or not they should be able to go do that. There's no formula, there's no tactical statements about whether or not they should be able to watch a certain movie or listen to a certain kind of music. There's none of that in the Bible. What there is in the Bible is a missional statement about what we're supposed to do as dads. And when he gives the missional statement, it's interesting, he starts not with what we are supposed to do, but with what we are supposed to not do. He starts with the negative command. And the negative command is you cannot provoke your children to anger. That is to say, you cannot prod them, you cannot poke them, you're not supposed to push them, you're not supposed to shove them towards anger. And his concern is that this provoking, as I'll talk about in just a second, this provoking your kids to anger will negate your ability to live on mission, to talk about the mission of God inside of your home. Colossians 3 is helpful in considering what this means. It's very similar to the language of Ephesians chapter 6. In Colossians chapter 3, he says, "Fathers, do not provoke your children," same phrase as what you find in Ephesians, "lest they become discouraged." This word discouraged literally means that they would lose energy or they would lose passion. The idea here is that dads, as we go through life, if we poke our children, if we prod them towards anger, if we encourage them because of the way we provoke them, if they end up in a place of anger, where they are ending up is in a place of discouragement, where they have lost passion and they have lost energy. And if kids lose passion and energy, then the mission will never be accomplished in their life. So the calling of them, which we're going to get to in just a second, of what it means to grow up, to raise them up in the instruction and discipline of the Lord, that's the mission. But if you get this wrong, if you get the provoking them to anger wrong, you will never get them to the second part of where they are called to be, because your kids will have lost energy and they will have lost passion. And God commands us as dads, do not provoke your children to anger. Don't provoke them to anger. I thought about this week about what does God mean when he says that? Don't provoke your children to anger. What is he concerned about if he doesn't want them to become so discouraged that they lose passion and they lose energy? And I think part of that is what you see in Proverbs chapter 24, that the righteous man falls seven times and rises again. Is this the way you parent, dads? Do you speak over your children that the righteous man falls seven times and rises again? Is the encouragement and the voice inside of your home that, yes, I know you failed, but you are not a failure? The righteous man rises again. Is the mode of communication inside of your house that you are telling your children, dad has failed again and again and again, but the righteous man rises up? A dad who provokes his children to anger, they lose passion, they lose energy, and they don't rise again. The voice of the dad in the home has to be saying, the righteous man falls seven times, and as we just sang, his mercy is more. That in the failure, his mercy is more. Though sin abounds, grace abounds all the more. That in every failure, in every shortcoming, his grace and his mercy is enough. We speak the gospel over our kids so that we don't provoke them to anger. We don't provoke them to discouragement. But when they fail, we say, rise up, go again, try again. God's mercy is there for you. His forgiveness is there for you. And therefore, my forgiveness as a father towards you is there for you. Rise up. And though you are hurt 70 times seven, forgive your kids and get them to rise up. The righteous man falls seven times and rises again. The enemy wants to discourage our kids. He wants to take their heart. He wants to tell them that the gospel is impossible, that they've fallen too far, that there's no recovery. And our voice as a dad is to say, you are not too far. that you have not sinned too greatly, you have not fallen too far, you have not come up too short. His mercy is more, his grace is more, and we should be quieting the voice of the enemy inside of our home that wants to discourage our kids and speak the gospel over them that his grace is sufficient for even our deepest and our darkest sins and our darkest hour. His grace is enough, amen? That's the voice of the dad in the home. Every child is different. Some of the things that may spur them on may discourage another child. And I think that's part of the reason why there's also not a lot of tactical here. Don't provoke your children to anger. And his thought here is around not something that might provoke them to anger, obedience. He hasn't excused them from obedience. He started with obedience. So if your kid gets angry that you're asking them to do something that they should be obeying, this is not an exception to this. That's not provoking them to anger. What he has in mind here is the discouragement that says you cannot live in obedience or you cannot follow the commands of God. I got a list this week from several sources, Ligonier Ministries and the Biblical Counseling Coalition, Focus on the Family, Grace to You. I thought this might be helpful. You can take a picture of this. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on it, so you're not going to have time to write these down. But maybe we just read these. I'll just read these over you and let the Spirit bring conviction where he needs to in your home. These are ways that we provoke our children to anger. We fail to praise or encourage them. We model sinful anger. We're too strict. We have double standards. We refuse to admit we're wrong. We compare them to others. We criticize them in front of others. We allow too much freedom. We abuse them physically. We have unrealistic expectations. We assume they're wrong. We have a lack of schedule in our home. We discipline in anger. We're inconsistent with discipline. We constantly find fault. We don't listen to their opinion. We don't make time to just talk. We fail to keep our promises. We don't allow enough freedom. We mock our child. We ridicule or name call, or we practice favoritism. I would encourage you this afternoon, maybe ask your kids if there's anything that you're doing. I asked my kids last week when I was teaching on this and starting to prepare for this, hey, are there some things, some of those ended up on the list of things that I do to provoke them to anger. But ask your kids, is there anything I'm doing as a dad that's provoking you to anger? The reason why it matters and the reason why God puts it first is because before we can even get to the mission of what we're supposed to do, this can be a detour off of the plan. We've lost the child. We've discouraged them. They've lost energy and they've lost passion before we even get to what we're calling them to be. Don't do this. Don't provoke your children to anger. Okay, it destroys the mission. All right, point number four is our job as dads is to make Jesus the hero of the home. Our mission is to make Jesus the hero. You see this in the second part of verse 4. Bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. The discipline and instruction of the Lord. I want to show you from two Old Testament verses what this means. This idea of making Jesus the hero. Now, this is, for context, if you were in the church in Ephesus and you got this letter and Paul had said this to you, this would have landed in an incredible way on you. I mean, it would have been stunning for you to hear somebody tell dads or fathers to bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. The words discipline and instruction were words that were encompassing of raising kids entirely. So it included their educational activities. It included their emotional development, their physical development. It's basically the whole upbringing of kids is what Paul has in mind here. And he says, I want you to take their entire upbringing, the instruction, the learning, intellectual, emotional, everything, and I want you to do that in the Lord. Now, in their culture, for someone to say that, and this is not our culture, so it's hard for us to grasp this idea, but in their culture, parents did not raise kids at all. That was the job of servants in the household to take care of the kids until they came to an age of maturity, and then the parents would engage with them. So they didn't change diapers, they didn't teach them anything. That was all outsourced to somebody else. Their job didn't really kick on until the kids came to maturity. Even more stunning is sometimes in the home, mom would have responsibilities, but more stunning in their culture would have been to say to dads, you have responsibility. Nobody did that in their culture. So it was radical for them to say, hey, dads, this is your responsibility. Even more radical was to say children. When he says, bring them up, do not provoke your children, but bring them up. Speaking about children, in their culture, dads wouldn't have engaged at all, but they certainly would not have engaged with their daughters. They would have engaged only with their sons when they reached a reasonable age because they thought women didn't have a place of any meaningful significance in society. So God is giving them something that is completely countercultural. Our countercultural aspect would be, we basically view the job of dad as teaching kids how to hit a baseball or bump a volleyball, and we're supposed to be the sports coordinators as dads, but there's not a lot of other expectation in society on us as dads. And God's saying something very radical to us this morning. He's saying, you have responsibility to be on mission in the home, and the mission is you're supposed to bring your kids up in the instruction and discipline of the Lord. I want to show you two texts in the scriptures where this is, I think, becomes, we can flesh this out a little bit of what does it mean to bring our kids up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. Here's the first one. This is from Deuteronomy chapter 6. It says, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your might. So dads, before we even get into the job that we have to do of getting our being on mission as a dad, you've got to start with loving God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, as Jesus says. And then loving others as he has loved us, second commandment. So it starts with us having our hearts zeroed in on loving God with everything we have. And then look at what he says. These words I command you today shall be on your heart, and you shall teach them diligently to your children. And they shall talk of them when you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, and when you rise. That is all-encompassing. When you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, and when you rise. So you are always either stationary or moving. I know, newsflash, right? And he says, whether you are stationary, whether you are sitting still or moving, you better be talking about God in your house. Whether you are lying down or waking up, be talking about God. So still or moving, awake or asleep, we are supposed to be talking about God all the time. Everything should orient in our lives and in our conversation. Our kids should hear us with our lips orienting everything relative to God. Sunrise, sunset, stars, moon, job, school, work, everything. God should be so prevalent in our house that you can't eat a starburst without us giving thanks to who God is. That when we find an empty parking spot at the mall, we should give thanks for who God is. That in everything we do, whether we are still or moving, awake or asleep, our kids should hear us articulating the goodness and the greatness of our God. We have no promise as parents that our kids will come to faith. There's no certainty that one day they will embrace the same faith that we have. But it should be true about them that in 20 years or 30 years, when they're sitting around and they're laughing about us, they should be saying, my dad, he would never shut up about God. He just never stopped. I mean, I peeled this yellow starburst and he was so thankful to God for the yellow starburst. That everything about him, everything that happened, he kept pointing us towards God. Every time we got in the car, every time we sat down for dinner, every time I was around him, everything that came out of his lips was about the goodness and the greatness of God. This is what it means to bring our kids up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. It is all encompassing. It's everything we are and do. We are speaking about the goodness and the greatness of God. We never shut up about it as dads. And your kids, it's totally cool for your kids to hear your voice, teach them how to shoot a rifle or how to shoot a basketball or how to dribble or how to paint or whatever, how to mow the lawn. Those are all good things to teach your kids. But there should be one thing that is the constant refrain of your voice, Your kids should constantly hear you talking about God. Whether you are still or moving, awake or asleep, it should never stop. Just keep talking about the goodness and the greatness of God. Now, here's another one. So part of it is we're doing it all the time. Part of the way that we bring our kids up in the instruction and discipline of the Lord is we do it all the time, always. The other part of it is, what do we say? So what's the content supposed to sound like? What are we talking about all the time? Psalm 78. I would encourage you to go read Psalm 78 today. I'm going to make application out of this. It says, tell to the coming generation the glorious deeds of the Lord and his might and the wonders he has done. So this is what we're supposed to be saying. The deeds of the Lord, his might, and the wonders he has done, that the next generation might know them, the children yet unborn. Meaning it should be so prevalent in our speech that it's going to pass to our grandchildren. Arise and tell them to their children, so that they should, and I love this phrase, so that they should set their hope in God. This is where I got my hero language. They should set their hope in God and not forget the works of God, but keep his commandments. Not only should you always be talking about God in your home, but you should be telling your story through the lens of what God is doing. That everything that happens in your life is a direct result of the faithfulness and the goodness of God. In Psalm 78, if you go read it this afternoon, what you will find is that the psalmist takes the story of Israel and he takes discrete events, and at each event, in each couple of sentences, he says about that sentence that God was at work in this. It means that the story was personal, and that's what I'm advocating here. What I'm saying is that when we talk about the glorious deeds of the Lord, when we talk about the wonders of the Lord, when we talk about the might of the Lord, there is an element of that that should be biblical teaching, that we take this text and we lay it before them. I would not advocate you make a 4-point sermon and bulletins for your kids every night after dinner and try to teach a 45-minute sermon. That's not going to go well. That's not what I'm advocating. There should be biblical truth that you're speaking to them. Psalm 78, though, is not solely talking about us taking the text and teaching it to our children. Psalm 78 is about taking our personal story and answering stories about who we are in the context of what God has done. So let's put this in the context of the way it shakes out in our home. Our kids ask us questions like, can you tell me about the day I was born? What happened? What was it like? Our kids ask us questions like, how was I adopted? Tell me my adoption story. I've got two adopted kids. They ask those kind of things. When did you meet me? What was it like? A couple of years ago, we were in the car going somewhere, and my fourth, Jude, was sitting in the back seat, and the conversation got, I guess, boring. I probably wasn't talking enough about God in the moment. It got kind of boring, and Jude says, Daddy, where'd you find mommy? I'm like, well, it wasn't a puppy rescue, but that's kind of a funny way of asking the question. Kids want to know, like, how did mommy and daddy get together? Where'd you find that out? How did you pick your job, Dad? Why did you choose to go to Baylor? And they have all of these questions. How do you answer that question? Do you answer that question by telling them about how they were beautifully and wonderfully knitted in their mother's womb? About how he took care to know them in the innermost being of their mother? How he knitted them together, every aspect of their being? From conception all the way to birth? Do you talk to them about the faithfulness of God when their lungs for the very first time took their own breath and separated away from complete dependence upon mom? Do you just tell the story about how you met him or you met her, about the faithfulness of God and about what God did to bring you together, about how God works? Do you talk to them in their adoption story about all of the things in the world that had to happen in order for them to end up in your family, of all the things that God orchestrated by his faithful and good hand to bring about them into your family? What I'm advocating for you as dads is that not only should you be talking about God all the time, but every aspect of your being and everything that happens. You are for your kids to be a paradigm that turns it to the goodness and the greatness of God. That every circumstance, every unfolding of your life and theirs should be interpreted for them through the lens of, this was a glorious deed of God. God showed his might by doing this. God showed his power by doing this. God showed his wonders by doing this. That we would speak and talk all the time in a way that tells our kids about the beauty and the glory and the wonder and the majesty of God. What does your story sound like? In the midst of talking about the deeds, the glorious deeds of God and his might and his wonders, what you are doing for your kids is you're teaching them that Jesus is the hero. You're teaching them that not just as they open up the scriptures and from page one, you see Jesus as the hero from the beginning, as John explains that it was Jesus who was there in the beginning, creating. All the way to the end, we see Jesus lifted up as the hero. And not only should our kids hear our voices as dads, teaching them the scriptures that teach us that Jesus is the hero, but they should see our lives and the affirmation of everything about us, affirming that in our lives, Jesus is the hero. All the time, making Jesus the hero. It's personal. So let me do this in wrapping up. Every story, everything about us makes Jesus the hero. Let me make application in a couple of places. There's lots of application, I think, in that for dads. I'll come back to dads in just a second, but not all of you are dads in the room, so let me make some application. Application here for wives. If your husband is working at this and trying in this, encourage them in it, wives. Encourage your husband. Thank you for trying. Thank you for working at it. Thank you for being a godly husband. Be a voice of encouragement that the righteous man falls seven times and rises again. So if he's failed in it and he's not doing it well, encourage his voice. Encourage him that the righteous man does fall seven times and rises again. Be that voice of encouragement. Pray for him. And then I would also encourage you in it. Don't make him just the last stop on the train of discipline. So don't put dad in a position all the time where you've tried everything else and it's all failed and now it's dad's turn. Move him towards the front. Now there's times and places, I'm not discouraging you from saying, look, man, your dad's gonna deal with this. That's okay. And that needs to happen at times, but that shouldn't be the only place that dad gets inserted. So encourage your husband to step in early. Second encouragement, maybe you're here this morning and you're a single mom, or maybe your husband, not a believer, or maybe he has no interest in living out the godly principle that's here. And you look at this and you think, man, I feel like God's abandoned me. I feel like he's bailed on me. My home doesn't look anything like the ideal of Ephesians chapter 6. Can I just encourage you this morning that God has not forgotten you? He has not abandoned you. You are known by him. I am married to the most godly woman. She's the godliest woman I've ever been around, and she grew up in the home of a single mom. God has not lost your children. He does not miss them. Psalm 68 may be of comfort to you. It's the promise of God that he is a father to the fatherless. So if you're a single mom in here this morning, God is for you. And the principles of not provoking your children to anger, but raising them up in the instruction and discipline of the Lord, that is instruction for you as a single mom or as a wife who is trying to do this without a husband who's willing to engage in it. Don't be discouraged. God is for you and he is for your kids, and being faithful in it will bring reward and encouragement. God's not abandoned you. He's not forgotten you. Next application is for single guys in the room. If you're single, you're not married, and you're like, what does this have to do with me? You better get on mission, guys. Because when you get married and you start to have kids, step one is loving God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and you can start on that right now. You want to be a great dad one day? You want to be a great husband? Love God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. If you don't get that mission right, none of the rest of this even matters. As I said a couple of weeks ago, you can marry the right girl and be the wrong guy. If you're not on mission, loving God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, nothing else matters. That's why Jesus says it's the first commandment with promise. Advice for single women in the room looking for a husband or thinking about maybe starting to look for a husband. Hey, biceps are great, but they're worthless when it comes to parenting. You better find a guy who's already on mission, loving God with all his heart, soul, mind, and strength. You find a guy who loves God with his heart, soul, mind, and strength, and he's on mission, and that's the guy you want to follow because the mission is already good, submission. You want to be under that kind of mission that you're going to call your kids into, of being under the mission of making God great inside of your home, not provoking your children towards anger or towards wrath. Okay, lastly, dads. Get in the game, guys. This is radical stuff. It sounds simple. Don't provoke your children to anger. Raise your kids in the nurture and admonition of the Lord or the instruction and discipline of the Lord. It's simple. Are you doing it? Are you working at it? Are you using your voice inside of your home to constantly tell about the goodness and the greatness of God? And if you're not, rise up. The righteous man falls seven times and rises again. And so I'm saying to you this morning, rise up, get up, use your voice to talk about God all the time in your home. Tell about his goodness and his greatness. Tell your story through that context of how God has been good and how God has been faithful. Okay, here's what we're going to do just in closing. If you're a dad in the room, you got kids in the house, here's what I want you to do. I want you to stand up. You got kids in the room. You got kids in your house. You're caring for them. Go ahead, stand up. Stand up. There are two places in the scripture where we see laying on of hands. One is with the apostles and the disciples. Jesus lays hands on people and they're healed. The other place that you find it in the New Testament is when the church is sending people out on mission. And what we're talking about here this morning is about sending dads on mission. We're praying and hoping for dads to live this out, that they would not provoke their kids to anger, but that they would raise their kids up in the instruction and the discipline of the Lord. So when we walk out of here, guys, that's our mission. That's what we're called to. That's what we got to lead towards.